Good morning, Montreal. You are tuned to the Wednesday Morning After on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have a tight show today with two pre-recorded interviews from Arts and Culture and one from the Music Spot. The first interview is with Rami Babawi of Traces, the Canadian artistic display at Dubai Expo 2020. The second interview is with Timothy J. Tim is releasing an album of new music that hits home. The third interview is with Lena Cruz of Morphs. Lena is a choreographer and dancer we would love to get to know. 8 o'clock brings Democracy Now!, 8:15 brings Weather, and after some music, we'll visit the podcast In the Shower with Taz and Marcus, where this week's question is, why do we get bags under our eyes? After a little more music, we'll wrap up the show. Let's start the day off with some music.
Your terms will out on mine. I really wanted you as love, I won't compromise this time. You say you want to decide where I fit in your life. I got my own opinions and they just don't align.
There's a lot going on in the world today. See how it affects Montreal's Black and Caribbean community. Read the Community Contact. News, features, opinions, music reviews, cultural events, and so much more. Our voices, our perspectives, our community. Published every 2 weeks, pick it up at your favorite community spot or visit us online at our new and dynamic website, mtlcommunitycontact.com. Easy to navigate and lots to enjoy. Archived issues also on the site and available on the web. That's mtlcommunitycontact.com. Stay in contact.
Early in the morning, before the sun rose, when the first bird sang, even while everyone was still asleep.
Morning. On that morning.
Doodle-doo. I hear the rooster crowing.
Now you must wake up.
Now every morning when I wake up,
I woke up this morning with
the kiss of the morning.
Got up 7:30 every morning at the same breakfast.
Réveillez-moi à 8 heures demain matin.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Made of bacon and eggs.
In the morning.
In the morning.
In the morning.
Why should the sun replace the moonlight?
Has this ever happened to any of you, or will it happen to any of you, on the morning after the night before?
You are listening to The Morning After on CKUT 90.3 on the FM dial.
Traces is one component of Canada's substantial presence at Expo 2020 Dubai under the theme The Future in Mind, an NFB production. This work by the architect Collective Canva, multimedia designer and art director Etienne Paquette, and the consulting firm Creos is a poetic vision of an uncertain future and a reflection on the present that challenges visitors while raising awareness of the growing threat to ecosystems caused by climate change. With us today, we have Rami Babawi, architect, co-founder of Canva, concept, creative art director, and production designer. Hi, Rami, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sheila. It's a pleasure to be here.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be involved in Traces.
My name is Rami Babawi, and as you were mentioning, I'm one of the partners and co-founders of Canva, Canva Architecture in Montreal, with Tudor Radulescu. It's a team of a little less than 15 people that were traditionally an architecture firm, but as through the years, as we're almost reaching 20 years, we've gone between ephemeral to permanent projects, art, architecture, and there's a whole variety of shapes, sizes, and scales of projects. I think most importantly, what we're trying to put forward are different narratives, experiences, and be able to both technically and in a narrative way put forward projects that are meaningful. So Traces, it was a nice surprise. It's the Global Affairs Canada that had the time commissioned the NFB to do the work. We had already, particularly with Mr. André Picard, had already met in different occasions. I had been giving different conferences or talks. And he put together a team which was composed of Canva, Etienne Paquette, and Creos, and asked us to put forward an intention, sort of proposal, to occupy the sort of public space in front of the Canada Pavilion, the plaza, and the entry hall, which is somewhere a semi-covered place. And that's how Traces began.
Rami, you are an architect for Traces. What is your formal education and experience as an artist?
Well, my education, I'm actually an architect graduate from McGill University, the bachelor and the master's there. Oddly enough, before that, I had been in microbiology. But the formal education with regards to art, because we have to understand this is composed by a collective. So it's not me as an individual, as an artist. It truly is Canva putting forward art pieces. And I'm not sure there's a big difference in our minds between or at least there's a lot of overlaps between art and architecture. And is it in terms of scale? Is it in terms of duration? Is it in terms of materiality? We've considered buildings to be art and we've considered art to be architecture. And so I think throughout our career, as we started playing and oscillating between both, we produced a certain amount of art pieces that were either in museums or contemporary galleries. We were in the Arsenal, I remember a few years ago, with a piece called Deconstructing Camping. But every time we were putting forward art, it was also complementing our architecture. So Deconstructing Camping was a piece where we broke down the different senses that you can find in nature as a sort of studying ground for the biodome, the science museum for which we were the architects. We've built university residences in front of McGill University. And before putting them up, we scattered 30 bed frames on an empty lot as a sort of occupation by the program of the building without the building. And that again complemented the architecture. And one of the important pieces we had done, that's where we met most, a lot of the NFB people, was Entre les Rangs, which was swaying 28,000 rods with reflectors that mimicked wheat fields, a sort of agricultural heritage in the middle of the city. So there's always these playing in between both. So I'm not sure that we take on the hat as artists and certainly not only as architects, but we tend to dilute the boundaries between these two.
Please describe the art installation.
Traces is born from, I mean, when you're in an expo, a world expo where people are sharing and putting forward both their images and trying to establish a sort of network that relates different people, you try to think of how can you represent Canada with regards to that. And I know that at the time, as we were putting all this, there was more and more official announcements regarding global climate change, global challenges, global warming, and so forth. So if you look at Canada as a sort of very rich in terms of nature, landscapes, environments, and species, you realize that gradually with the changes that are occurring right now, we're starting to lose certain habitats. And as these habitats fade away, species are becoming extinct or they're being displaced and so forth. But it's happening so rapidly that we wanted to sort of interpret this in an artistic manner and imagine that if species are disappearing at such a rate, could you imagine a flock of birds, a murmuration of birds in full flight the symbol of freedom, of life, of existence, be fossilized all at once. And the fossil being the sort of reference to these amber products that speak of extinction of a species. And can you fossilize a flock of birds? And so that was the true concept, the true story behind all that. And gradually what happened, these were reinterpreted into 8 different boxes. And every box is a sort of stage. It's a sort of a container, but where people are allowed to enter. They participate, they are part, they're interacting with the fossils. And the fossils within most of those 8 boxes are there. And they come about with different titles, with different stories, but always following the same leitmotif. So that's what we say. It's a sort of this vision, a very poetic vision of maybe what's an uncertain future, but it allows us to reflect on our present and to put forward something that's both individual, collective, national, and international for Canada Expo.
Who are the people involved in the realization of this project, Traces?
There are many. I mean, it's a very collaborative process because a lot of the things were novel. I mean, at the head of this, the NFB wasn't just acting as commissioners, but they were also very part of the process and they were part of the brainstorms, the discussions, the references. So that was just absolutely extraordinary to have an entity that's so rich and historically so present in World Expos. We had, obviously, Etienne Paquette, a multimedia artist, excessively sensitive, significant, poised, and he was able to bring another level of elegance when it came also to the interactivity. Because at the end of the day, the participation of the visitors are also to provoke something positive, and whether it allows for sounds to appear or lights and so forth. And he was able to bring that about with elegance. There was obviously Chaos, that was us, the sort of producers of the whole thing that were in charge of fabricating, of organizing, of scheduling, of the traveling. And they were also a big part. There was Serge Maheur also with them. That was an enormous asset in terms of engineering and technical to that. We had Karine Califet, that was an artist that helped. I mean, if you look at the birds, they were put in those sort of mediums as they were poured. They were hand sculpted, hand carved. And then they were scanned. And then after being scanned, they were brought to animation. And then certain frames were frozen and then printed in 3D. So there was an enormous amount of people that participated in this. And Global Affairs Canada, all the way, not just here in Ottawa and Montreal, but even in Dubai, all the way to even sweeping and cleaning at times. And of course, within the Canva team, well, there was myself, the head, the lead project lead for this was Olga Karpova. But whether it be Tudor, Felix, Minjao, Forso, a lot of the team participated. So I think the way to look at it is that this collaboration, and I've said this in the past about the projects, but when addressing environmental issues, this collaboration is exactly what's needed to address our climatic crisis right now. And so it serves as a model, not just to create an art piece, but perhaps as a model of how all these different entities can work together towards carrying a single and meaningful message so needed right now.
How long will Traces be available for viewing?
The World Expo lasts for about 6 months. So it's going to be there until the middle of next year. But the journey of Traces only begins at the World Expo. The point is that for many years afterward, 5, 6, 7, Traces is a traveling exhibit. And so these birds, these fossils of birds and the boxes will also continue their migration. And with a species that doesn't really take into consideration boundaries, frontiers, nations, and when we're seeing all sorts of changing in migration and movement patterns of birds, it's interesting to imagine that the art itself will also be traveling to reach out different places, to occupy spaces differently, to be received also differently depending on cultures and sites, but to put forward that same unifying message.
How does Traces bring a sense of community to observers?
How does Traces bring a sense of community to observers or at least visitors? I think, and then there was a very nice article just recent recently published by a collaborator, Concordia Carmela, about how echo art can actually convey and change and bring forward something with regards to the environment. So when we create series of experiences, whether it's art or architecture, we think of the notion of the heart, the head, the hand. I think traces, when it comes to the heart, it creates an emotional attachment. It's compelling. I mean, it has a beauty to it that in itself aesthetically is attractive, is appealing, and it serves as a beacon, as it brings people close to them. And not just in terms of visuals, but in terms of the gorgeous soundscapes and lighting and so forth. So the heart, I think, is affected. And then you get to the head, which not everybody necessarily is going to understand that, but there are messages within it. As you open one of the boxes, is a desk. And as you open that desk, there's an image of a bird that sort of trapped in this medium, in this fossil, looking at you with sounds from the ocean. In one of the cases in the box is called The Forgotten. The cubes are just thrown on the floor as if we've mistreated what was so precious in life. So I think that's going to bring about some sort of thinking, and it'll therefore be affecting the head. But obviously our hope is that we reach all the way to the hand. So moving away once again from the notion of a footprint, of what we leave behind as residues, collectively, individually, but can this help us to promote change and want to save and care for species and care for what's surrounding us in terms of environment? So I'm hoping that in terms of how people will be receiving it or how it brings a sense of community, is that that message sort of applies to all communities. And once again, it's meant in a way that it doesn't take into considerations origins, races, orientation, or whatever. The community becomes a larger community.
What does the symbolism represent in traces?
Urgency, need to care, need to acknowledge that we're part of a balance, need to move away, shy away from a very anthropocentric way of seeing life where humans are at the center. Understand that we're part of something else. I think that playing with fossils and notion of extinction is also working on themes of memory. A few years ago in 2017, Canada was awarded the Prix de Rome, the Canada Council of Canada, for a research that was entitled Adaptive Boundaries. And we were trying to sort of dilute the boundaries between this very hermetic way of building and secluding us, separating us from the outside, which in turn causes more climatic damage and so forth, but sort of have something that's more adaptive. And we traveled and met different people, and we had gone all the way to the West Coast with Jane McKinnon. We had a talk in Vancouver with him, and he was bringing about the notion of amnesia, which I found absolutely incredible. And Olga has often mentioned this is our capacity to move forward in what we call human progress only possible because of a collective amnesia. And so every generation forgets what was for the past generation. So our references of what nature used to be is when you were a child, but it never sort of goes beyond that because we're sort of forgetting. And I think that the symbolism in traces is also to not forget. I mean, one of the pieces, which is called the memorial, which is sort of a murmuration of birds traveling across the landscape, and they're fossilized. It's such a fragile beauty, but it sort of serves as respect. It's almost like a stone horizontally. We're playing tribute to the elegance of a living species. It's sort of as you pay tribute to somebody who's passed away. So I think not forgetting is important. And I think that traces captures the symbolism, the delicateness between extinction and life, urgency and memory.
How does this artwork Traces address intersectional issues like interconnectedness and being Canadian?
I think Traces starts from an understanding of the nature and the environments that surround us in Canada. It's a very vast country, ocean to ocean, an enormous amount of different climates, different vegetation, different ecosystems. And I think that the richness of that also brings about the need to care for it. And I think it interconnects within Canada in the sense that maybe on the East Coast you have more erosion. Maybe on the West Coast we're talking about forests. Maybe in the middle of the country there's some dryness. Maybe in the middle of closer to Ontario or Quebec, there's other issues. And so everybody sort of had these little isolated moments where the environmental impacts are true. They are not just statics, stats and numbers. They actually have a true repercussion on us. And as they have a repercussion, then we start noticing changes in the habits and presence of different species. And I think that traces allows us to unite those different impacts and effects, because basically we're revealing them as all being the same in terms of a need for care. And I'm not just saying in terms of trying to be an ecologist or environmentalist, no. I think just the notion of being sensitive to what surrounds us, I think that can address issues that can interconnect and speak of being Canadian.
What will happen to traces in the future?
Well, as we were mentioning, in the future, traces will leave World Expo. And that was sort of the launching pad, which is quite a spectacular one. But it will be traveling around the world. And thanks to the help of the NFB and CREOS and GAC. And right now, its itinerary is not defined. Right now, I think that what's particular about every piece of art or architecture that you create, as it's installed and it occupies the public realm, you learn to know it, you learn to understand it. And as you learn to understand it, you also learn what type of spaces it should be occupying, how it should be revealed. There's a cluster of eight. Should the cluster remain together? Should it be separated? Should it be outside? Should it be inside? I think there was a lot of self-discovery when we traveled to Dubai. I think to see them placed in front of the Canada Pavilion allowed us to understand them better, as they now have their own lives. And so for us is to orient the next step beyond the expo and see where they will be traveling for the next few years.
If our listeners want more information or to buy tickets to Dubai Expo, where should they go?
Oh, I think that if somebody wants tickets to Dubai Expo, they're going to have to go on the official website. I know that when we were there, there was a lot of visitors. And I mean, it's extraordinary because you're thinking that also from all the different countries, I forget how many they are, 150, 160, 70. But the people that work within these pavilions are often coming from those countries. And so it becomes this very big international gathering. And I know that the availabilities with regards to transport, tickets, and so forth is readily available on those websites. I guess it's a question of getting to the country as well.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Thank you, Sheila. And I wanted to thank you for you and the CKUT for the interest in putting forward a piece that we believe is meaningful and precious.
You have been listening to Rami Babawi speaking about traces currently on display at Dubai Expo in the Canada Pavilion. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Whose data? Our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Kumbit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at kumbit.org or email at info@kumbit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook.
You are tuned in to the Wednesday Morning After Show with your host, Sheila Ferrando.
Calgary's rock ambassador, Tim Cambridge, a.k.a. Timothy J, is back with another triumphant single in Better Late. The track, which shares the namesake of the band's upcoming debut album, reminds its listeners that no matter what junction in life you find yourself in, it's always better to pick yourself up and make strides to achieve a goal instead of not doing it at all. With us today, we have Tim Cambridge of Timothy J. Hi, Tim, and welcome to the show.
Hey, Sheila. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to form the Timothy J Project.
Well, my name's Tim Cambridge. I'm a songwriter, singer, recording artist from Calgary, Alberta. A few years back, I started to work with a producer named Darren Schofield. And between the two of us, we started writing some songs. I had a bunch of stuff written, half finished, fully finished. We started with no real intention of a full record, started working together, and ended up being Timothy J. And as a matter of fact, last night was our CD release party here in Calgary, and so we're off and running.
Who are your bandmates, and what does everyone play or do?
Well, I mentioned Darren Schofield. Darren is a guitar player, singer. He also produced the record. So he plays guitar, sings background vocals, and plays keyboards in the studio. A dear friend of mine, Jared Hunchak, is the drummer. He sings as well and plays drums. On bass is Jamie Warren. He plays bass and sings. Right now, that's the four of us. We probably will get a keyboard player at some point, but right now it's the four of us doing our thing.
Who taught you the expression better late? And what inspired you to write this song?
Well, I had very supportive parents young, and they always, you know, wanted us to shoot for our best lives and were very open-minded and embraced my music thing. I'm not sure if they ever said the term, it's better late than not, but I started writing a song thinking about the amount of time that I'd spent on the road traveling and how little work sometimes got accomplished when so much focus was on playing every night. And then I thought about what happens in other people's lives in relationships where, you know, so there's kind of three stories to the song. The first and second verse are about lost loves refound. And the last verse would be speaking from my own experience of not really time wasted, but looking back at the amount of time spent traveling and, you know, not necessarily getting that much work done because you're so focused on showing up every night to play. So that's where the song came from. I've always been a fan of, I think it's called a colloquialism. And so in this particular song, it's not better late than never, it's better late than not. So basically saying, you know, there's lots of time in life to do whatever you want to do and no matter what. So that's where that song came from.
Maybe listen to some of your music?
I would love that.
This is Better Late on the Wednesday Morning After.
Who could say if the love was true? I'll second guess and no follow through. Years went by, seems she missed him too. Happy now, so it must be true. It's better late. She wears a arm sleeve like a cool tattoo. Still dreams of the boy that she loved in school. A chance encounter at the corner store. It's better late.
My wheels spun the same highway songs. Time went by, seems I found my stride. Looking back, it was a bumpy ride. It's better late. It's better late. It's better late than not. It's better.
Upcoming album is called Better Late. What is the story behind this album?
3 or 4 years back, I wanted to record a cover, an Elton John cover on the acoustic. I'm a guitar player as well. And I went to see my dear friend and now guitar player, producer, Darren Schofield, to record the song, which got us going in a direction. And I showed him some songs I was working on. We recorded a track that is on my new record called This Time, that was a song that I'd been working on for a while. We finished the tune and things just progressed one song after another with no real intention, no expectations. And by last summer, we had almost completed an album and we went into the studio with real drums to the demos. That's really how this album started. The title track, Better Late, was the last song written and kind of inspired by the fact that it took us, you know, with COVID and everything going on, it took us a couple of years to finish this. So we laughed about it. It's better late than not, or better late than never. And that's how we ended up how we are today, with the album just released last Friday.
One of your songs is named Olive, Don't Lose Faith. Who is Olive and what is her story?
The story behind this song is, a few years ago when my father passed away, my mother shared a audio tape from my grandfather, her dad, that talked about dealing with the loss of a loved one. Very inspiring recording. My grandfather, whose wife, my grandmother, his name was Olive, passed away fairly young from cancer. My grandfather, being a very spiritual, faith-based person, struggled with his faith after losing his wife, my grandmother, Olive. I guess wondering why this had happened to him. And his recording was to help my mother and her brothers to deal with the loss of a loved one. So she shared it with us, deal with the loss of my father. The audio recording I listened to over and over again. My grandfather was very articulate. He spoke of the losing faith and refining faith and knowing that they're trusting in the life after. And really, that's where the lyrics from this song came from. We're more than just flesh and blood, more than just time and space. And, you know, basically the walk to our next life. I felt it translated very well as the song was finished, just as the pandemic started, when people were probably searching for faith, the most maybe they ever had. So that's really the basis of this. So all of it was my grandmother. It's also my mother's middle name. So the song is about finding faith in troubled times. And that's where that song came from.
May we listen to some more of your music?
Yes, please.
This is all of Don't Lose Faith on CKUT.
Don't lose faith.
If our listeners want some free listening time or to buy your music, where should they go?
They'd like to stream it for free. It's on SoundCloud and on Reverb Nation. If they'd like to stream it or buy it, it's available on all the streaming services, Spotify, Deezer, all the streaming services. If they'd like to purchase a CD copy or follow me, I'm on Instagram, Timothy J Music. I have an artist page on Facebook, Timothy J Music on Facebook artist page. They can DM me and I will send you a copy of the CD for a small fee. You can have an actual disc of the music. I also have 3 videos for my songs on YouTube as well, which is free to stream as well.
Well, thank you for your interview today.
Sheila, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I hope your listeners enjoy the music and will check out my entire album.
You've been listening to Timothy Cambridge speaking about his project, Timothy J. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
You're listening to Radio CKUT 90.3 FM Montreal or online at ckut.ca.
How is imagination born? Who is the cook making magic in our dream kitchen? Who provokes our hallucinations, our psychoses, or causes us to fall in love? The answer, according to Lena Cruz, is the Morphs, an unparalleled storyteller of movement who creates madcap surprising worlds. She pulls back the curtain to reveal creatures living in a parallel world who are the sources of our imagination and also our personal and collective folly. Her mischievous tale unfolds as a joyous, energizing ceremony. The situations she invents are light, absurd, and droll, a triumph of liberty, the supernatural, and the fantastic. With us today, we have Lena Cruz. Hi, Lena, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome. Welcome to talking to you. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
First, please introduce yourself and tell us how you came to be a choreographer.
I've been in the dance for, I think, 47 or 48 years already. So when I was 16, I saw a dance performance, which I found very, very rich in imagery. It was mostly classical language, choreographic language, and classically trained dancers. But the imagery was just extremely creative and taking risks, especially at the time, which was 1973. And the decor and props that they use and everything, which is something that I also like now. So maybe I was inspired from the beginning by this performance that I saw when I was 16. And it really determined my route to dance, because I was not thinking of being a dancer at the time. But when I saw that, I realized that I could use almost all my faculties as a human being, you know, intellect, the body, the emotions, everything. I followed that road and I started training, but very soon also dancing. I loved being a dancer and discovering what choreographers had to propose. So I was really dedicated to that since basically 1973, because as soon as I started training, I was an apprentice in a company, but an apprentice that was also performing. So I was already performing from the start. It was a very strange situation, but I was very happy with it, but very challenging, let's say. And then in 1987, I just had the feeling that perhaps I wanted to explore expressing myself through my own creation. So I started progressively. It's been like doing solos for myself. It was what I found was the best way to explore. And after 15 years, more or less, of doing that, doing solos for myself and performing them, well, I was in Spain at the time, then I came here to Montreal. Slowly, I choreographed also with one more dancer or two more dancers, but me being also dancer in the piece. So that was like another few years doing that. And then by 2010, I really had the need to step outside and just choreograph and see the work from outside and do bigger pieces. I mean, pieces like group pieces with 5 to 7 dancers and so forth. So that's how it all happened since 1973 until here.
What is your formal education as a storyteller, choreographer, and dancer?
Well, I am trained in classical ballet, also in contemporary dance and karate, but I don't have any training per se as a storyteller, other than, you know, the experience of over the years of composing visually with dance, but all, and also through, you know, observing all other art disciplines. For me, paintings and sculptures also tell stories, even if they don't move. Everything tells a story, actually. So just observing, you know, theater pieces, even music, concerts. I mean, there's storytelling everywhere. So just life, but no real training as a storyteller, no.
You are a storyteller and told a story in your dance performance, Morphs. What is the story you are telling?
I think it's just mainly that I love the mystery of dreams, that I love imagination, that I love the mind, and that it's a way of celebrating it. That's about it, really.
What is the meaning of this story and the metaphors and allegories within?
The characters are inspired by what you can see in dreams, which is often incongruent or incoherent. They seem incoherent. I think that's the message. The metaphors are communicating that incongruency and joy and lightness are possible, and that fun and hope, in spite of the darker sides of life, are still there, that we can move towards them.
Who are the dancers involved, and what is their experience?
There's Eleanor Fouetter, Abbe Menher, Geneviève Robitaille, Alexandra Saint-Pierre, Antoine Tourmine, and Philippe Noirot, who is a musician, but he's on stage and he interacts with them too. He plays the music, but he also interacts with the dancers, and he sings, and he also recites some poems and texts. As for their experience, what do you mean by what is their experience as far as artists, like their training or?
Yes, please.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they're all contemporary dancers. Some are a little bit older. There's a dancer who's around 40 years old. The others are around 30. There are two that are quite young in their 20s. So it's a mix. And Philippe, the musician, is 65. So he has a training in music and theater also. One of the dancers is also very good in jig, which is the folklore dance of Quebec. So, but he's also an excellent contemporary dancer. But they're mostly contemporary dancers, yeah.
Who does the set costumes, makeup, and lighting design for Morphs?
Well, the set, the costumes, props, makeup, I do. This time I'm assisted by Cheryl Lalonde, who is an incredible artist who worked many years with Toronto Dance Theatre and with Robert Desrosiers. And so I have the luck of being assisted by her. And the lighting design is by Thomas Godefroy, who is a very inspired lighting designer. He really gets going and he's very motivated by the projects, and he gives all he has.
Is this the first performance of Morphs, and what is the current run?
Yes, it is. It's going to be the premiere. And it runs from October 27th through the 30th. The 27th, 28th, and 29th is at 7 p.m. And Saturday the 30th is at 4 p.m. at Agora de la Danse. And I just want to say also that distancing measures are still in place at Agora de la Danse. And the ventilation in the building is really top quality. So for anybody who's worried about that, the distancing measures are still in place.
Where will you be taking Morphs in the futures?
Well, for now, we're going to Toronto in at the end of March. And then we'll see. We are waiting to see how the pandemic evolves and if things can really keep going or not before we make any other plans.
Where did you look for funding to produce Morphs?
Oh, well, the Canada Council for the Arts, the Conseil des Arts de Lettres du Québec, and the Conseil des Arts de Montréal, which the three councils have supported the project, so that's been wonderful. And Agora de la Danse participated as well as co-producer with my company, with Filat 13. And it is the fifth time that they co-produce our work, so we're also very grateful for that.
Who produced Morph, and how did you like working with them?
Right. So when you say produced, I guess you're talking about Agora de la Danse as well, right? Or?
Well, yes.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, it's a co-production, and it's been already since 2010 that several pieces have been presented here, and they have participated in 5 different productions as co-producers. So we already know each other, let's say the team and myself and some of the people that work with me. It's really fun because they're following also our evolution, and they are also supporting us and encouraging us. So that is really essential for our company, this partnership.
If our listeners want more information or to buy tickets, where should they go?
AgoraDeLaDance.com. They'll find all the information they want and the link to buy tickets there. You do need proof of vaccination. Everybody knows that. But
thank you for your interview today.
Thank you so much, Sheila.
You've been listening to Lena Cruz speaking about her dance performance Morphs. I am your host, Sheila Ferrando.
A great night. You coming home with me? When I see you walking next to me, I can't help but stare. Your body so good next to me, baby. What you doing over there? I wanna kiss your lips. I wanna touch that. I wanna do this. He say, baby, ooh, that's ass. Are we moving too fast or too slow? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bet, you know. I could tell by the way you grabbing them. Okay, mm-hmm, you savaging. You want it right now. You can't pipe down. Bet the neighbors know my name, so don't forget my crown. Cause I take you where you really wanna go. I wanna roll. Sex appeal is on that O for sure. Hit my line up, I wanna know.
Okay.
I wanna know. I take you where you really wanna go. I wanna roll. Hit my line up, I wanna know.
Call up, 9:15, you been on my mind. You all the time, let's lay up and sip some wine. Next to you, I'll co-sign. I miss you, I wanna kiss you. Why would I ever diss you? Why would I dismiss you? You know I won't stop the front. Ooh, baby, I know what you want. I'm calling out your bluff. Your hands out cuff on that good freakily. Yeah, you be a freak in my sheets on that Ron Nisley. Body good, yeah, you need, you fit like a fiddle. Let me play.
Wish I could fit them. Hit my line up and do time. I'll be on my way like Usher Ray. Cause I pull up anticipating good love. Don't keep me waiting nice and slow. Ooh, baby, baby, yeah. I take you where you really wanna go. I wanna roll. Sex appeal is on that O for sure.
This is Democracy Now!
I have no doubt that the events we're seeing around the world, things like Myanmar and Ethiopia, those are the opening chapters, because engagement-based ranking does 2 things. One, it prioritizes and amplifies divisive, polarizing, extreme content. And 2, it concentrates it.
Facebook whistleblower Frances Haugen testifies before the British Parliament as journalists dissect thousands of internal company documents she leaked showing how Facebook prioritizes profits over safety. We'll get the latest. Then we go to Sudan, where at least 10 protesters have been shot dead following a military coup.
This is a full-fledged coup, and we reject it completely. We have to go back to the constitutional document. The government should be handed to civilians, and you should free all those you detained and bring them back to their positions. General Abdel Fattah Burhan should submit his resignation. His resignation is destroyed.